Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Get a Job. I'm your host, Kathleen Brady, and I am a certified career life management coach with over 25 years of experience helping people identify and achieve their goals. Now, those of you who have listened to us before know that the purpose of our show is to talk to job seekers and share with them best practices and then ideas about how to adapt them to your personal circumstances, no matter what stage you're at in your career or what industry you're targeting. So what we try to do is share information, take your calls to answer any specific questions that you might have. If you've got a question throughout the night, the number to call will be 646-716-9397, and we'll do our best to answer as many questions as we can tonight. I'm very excited to have with us Dr. Karen Britton. She is going to speak with us tonight about going to grad school. Before I sort of formally introduce Dr. Britton, I just want to mention that our other guest who had been, we'd advertised, Bernie Stratford from Fordham University, sadly had a family emergency, so he was not able to join us. But I know that Karen Britton will be able to carry the load, but we do certainly wish Bernie the best as he deals with his family issues. So we have spent a lot of time over the course of our show talking about self-assessment and the importance of knowing what it is you want and what it is you have to sell. We've talked about market research and how you have to go, and once you know what it is you have to sell, you've got to investigate the market to figure out who needs to buy, who wants to buy what it is you have to sell. And then implementation, and we've spent a lot of time talking about resumes and interviewing and messaging and all of that. We wanted to take a little side tour today and talk a little bit about continuing education. One of the things that I have learned or have seen over the years is that many job seekers, when they're not quite sure what job to look for, just decide, I'm just going to go to graduate school. And they say, well, you know, I'll go for an MBA or I'll go for a law degree because, well, then I'll be very versatile. So we want to really look at the logic behind that and determine, is that really the best thing to do, or are you just hiding out until the job market gets better? So we really want to kind of explore that. And as I said, I'm very excited to have with us tonight Dr. Karen Britton. She is the senior administrator, and she oversees student recruitment, admissions, enrollment planning, diversity recruitment, scholarship, financial aid, and career development at the University of Tennessee College of Law. So she's got a very wide perspective, everything from career services and sort of helping make that decision about whether or not you ought to go to graduate school to also then how do you finance graduate school to putting on her admissions hat and telling us what do admissions directors look for in all of this. So Dr. Britton, I'm so excited to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Kathy. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Great. Well, now, one of the things I always find, Karen, is I sometimes think that people go to grad school, particularly law school, for the wrong reasons. And so I know that you spent a lot of time talking to undergraduates about this decision about going to grad school. So what kinds of questions do you ask them to help determine if this is the right choice for them?
Well, oftentimes, Kathy, I find that it isn't so much that they are going for the wrong reasons, it's that they are not sure what the reasons are. They can't articulate the reasons, or the reasons that they might give are weak. They might be someone influential in their life is an attorney and suggested that as a career path. So they may be relying on misinformation or old information or just someone's opinion who knows them that suggests that, oh, because law school worked out and a legal career worked for me based on my knowledge of you, I believe it might work out for you. And I think that is often, you know, the wrong reason that I see most often is just relying on too little information, old information, or just someone's opinion. The other thing that I think is the most frustrating is that prospective students often have the perception that that the salaries or the job security in law school is perhaps much, the salaries are higher for graduates and for lawyers throughout their career, that jobs at high salaries are readily available for virtually every law graduate, regardless of the school or the market. And that is part of the misinformation cycle that hopefully has been removed in the last 3 or 4 years, but still hasn't been totally diminished. So all the wrong reasons, we certainly do see that many students can't stand up to scrutiny when I ask them why it is that they might go to law school. So if I have someone in my office, they're trying to decide whether to go to law school or whether to go to law school or graduate school or another degree, I often find myself, even though I'm in an admissions recruitment role, having more of a counseling conversation with them to help make sure that they actually have the facts in front of them and have done the proper self-assessment to know that that is the right degree for them.
And I just laugh because I'm thinking all the time I was growing up, my mother and my grandfather used to say to me, oh, you argue so well all the time, you should be a lawyer. And I think that a lot of people get those conversations around the dinner table, or as you say, it's a parent or somebody that they know and love that seems to have done well, so they just assume they can replicate that. It's interesting to me, and I hope that listeners hear it, the same process in looking for a job you need to do in determining whether or not to go to school. It's you have to do that self-assessment piece first and know what is it that you have, not so much that you have to offer, but what do you enjoy doing, and is law school going to help you get to that next level?
Well, Kathy, I noticed when you mentioned the topics that have been discussed so far on this program, I thought self-assessment, check. That's the very first thing someone needs to do before they decide whether or not to engage in the very cumbersome and expensive job of even applying for a graduate or professional school. So self-assessment, why you're going, is incredibly important. Market research, it has never been easier than it is now to get accurate and current consumer information about both the cost, the outcome, both the cost of law school or graduate school, and employment outcomes, the return on the investment of either a legal education or a graduate education. So it's never been more critical to do market research, and it's certainly never been simpler to do market research than it is now, since the American Bar Association is basically mandating that schools provide information in template form to provide consistency about both admissions profiles of the people that are admitted, and then the employment outcomes. So law schools may be under a little bit of scrutiny right now for providing candid information. So market research never been easier to do. And implementation is critical. Think about the fact that there are fewer applicants for law schools nationwide, and this is the same could be said of many graduate programs nationwide. It's never been, in a way, easier to get into the law school or the graduate program of your dreams. But still, you want to be able to market yourself effectively using resumes and cover letters and many of the same materials that you recommend students put together in a very professional fashion, or job changers put together in a very professional fashion. Those same skills are going to be used in terms of implementing a successful search for the graduate or professional degree that is right for them.
Great. Let's look at the self-assessment piece a little bit. So I know one of the questions people often ask is there a particular major that people look for? Is there a particular personality type that admissions directors are looking for, that or characteristics you need to have to be successful in law school?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that there is a really interesting body of research that I want to mention to you, Kathy, and you may be aware of this. The Law School Admission Council, which is the body that oversees the admission process, it's a database management service, and it is also the provider of the law school admission test. So the Law School Admission Council is truly a gateway into law school. They have done and used significant research from some faculty members in California, Schultz and Zedek, who performed some just outstanding research in lawyer effectiveness. That body of work, body of knowledge, is not only being used by the Law School Admission Council to in the evaluations that individuals can fill out about applicants for admission, but that body of knowledge, the 26 factors of lawyer effectiveness, are also being used by legal employers. These factors are actually just a really excellent working vocabulary of the types of skills that make a lawyer effective and therefore are skills that should be within the toolbox of any law student. So I think if I were recommending to a student to who was trying to do some self-assessment of what factors would likely lead to success, I would do some research using Schultz and Zedek's 26 factors of lawyer effectiveness. Read those factors and determine whether or not they feel like they have either that experience or that skill set. So that's a very substantive area. We certainly see that lots of students will use StrengthsFinder or some of the other name types of self-assessments, but really there's nothing better than just a good old-fashioned conversation, thoughtful conversation, informational interview with an attorney who is doing what the candidate thinks they might be interested in doing with their law degree. And then with a law student, so they can get an actual viewpoint of what it is like to go through the law school process, particularly as it relates to dealing with the uncertainties of the job market, particularly if someone is returning to law school, considering leaving a career in order to go to law school. They really have some serious considerations that should be taken into consideration. They also probably have well-formed patterns of both learning and of work that should be taken into consideration. Can those well-formed patterns be adapted into a second career? First, a second career as a law student, and then a second career as a student. Personality types, you're going to see all personality types. You see a lot, if you look at Myers-Briggs, you see a lot of people with the J factor, but you see introverts, extroverts, people who process information in all sorts of different ways and who have very different personalities. So I would recommend that anyone who is listening to this talk to a law school career services office to find out what self-assessments that unit might suggest, because I guarantee you, at least at my law school, we are not only prescribing or asking our prospective students and our entering students to go through a battery of self-assessments, but we are encouraging prospective students to go through a rather strenuous self-assessment before they determine that law school is right for them, in addition to gathering data.
Well, and it's interesting. There's one other assessment, I'm not sure, even because it's somewhat new, is the Highlands Ability Battery. The battery itself is not new, but they have a new lawyer's report that's only been out for about maybe 2 years now. I certainly helped them kind of come up with a way to deliver this information in terms of assessing the skill sets that you have or the natural abilities you have and how that might work in a legal environment. And it's I've not seen the 26 factors, and that is certainly something that I will do afterwards, because I think that again, for people who are looking for just the language and the words and read through that to see, oh, yeah, that sounds like me, or, oh, that sounds deadly dull. You kind of have to pay attention to your own gut like that. Mm-hmm. But what the Highlands does is it helps people figure out, you know, it doesn't tell you should or shouldn't be a lawyer, but it will say, here's where your challenges might be, and here are the skill sets then that you need to develop if that's the path you want to go down. So, again, it's just about giving you more and more information about yourself. I particularly love your idea of doing the informational interviews with the students and the lawyers. And the thing there, too, you know, in terms of the market research as well, one of the things I know I used to say when I was in career services to folks is what you always want to sort of start at the end. Where do you hope to be? And so talk to some potential employers and, you know, do you hire people from this school or, you know, what does their GPA have to be or, you know, kind of get some information about them, but also to look for other places lawyers work besides the American Lawyer, you know, top 100 firms, because that represents such a small segment of where the lawyer jobs are.
Well, Kathy, you're exactly right, and I think that has always been the case, but I think it is just people who are contemplating going to law school now have more access to factual information that will verify that that is indeed the case. I think many times a highly motivated individual planning to go to law school always thinks, oh, that person who doesn't get the job or the person that doesn't get the job of their dreams, that's not going to be me. That's never been me. I've always been successful. I've always been high achieving. That person is not going to be me. I think, though, that people have a tendency once they get into law school to sometimes define success in ways that are not necessarily well suited for them. We see students all the time who are blue because they don't get a job with a large law firm. And I'm making a six-figure salary to start. And I'll sit down with them and say, why is it that you're dissatisfied? And often it isn't. They aren't even sure that they would find life or career satisfaction there, but that for some reason they believe that that's the job you are supposed to have rather than the job you are well suited for. And certainly having that kind of conversation with yourself at the age of 22 or 23 or 24 is one thing. Before someone who has changed careers and goes into law or grad or any kind of professional school without a clear career trajectory and some really self-assurance that this is a good decision seems like a crazy decision given the cost of education and given the amount of income that would have to be given up in order to enter a full-time program. The other reason for the informational interviewing that I think is fairly critical, I was speaking to a group of prospective law students at a university in Kentucky just an hour ago, actually. And one of the techniques that I mentioned to them is they were determining, these were freshmen and sophomores, and then some people who were juniors and seniors who were actually in the admission process. But I encouraged them to go ahead and have as many informational interviews as possible for two reasons. The first is they need to be able to do some what I would call low-impact interviewing in order to get the hang of interviewing and informational interviewing before they start into those critical job interviews that really count. So being able to get some practice while an employer is still perfectly willing to talk and share and offer advice, great experience before the high-stakes interviews of law school begin. The other thing is to develop an understanding and appreciation for the importance of networking. As you know, Kathy, from reading material in our legal recruiting industry, most jobs for law graduates, entry-level jobs right out of law school, are acquired through either a direct application or through a referral or through networking. I think that the common perception has been that most jobs are acquired through a formal interviewing process that is facilitated by the law school career office. I think there's a perception that there is a pot of gold of jobs sitting in every career office and that each student just comes in and dips their hand into the pot. Well, that has never been the case, as you well know. But I think that it's never been more critical to understand that measuring the effectiveness of someone's job for search is directly correlated to the amount of strategic effort, planning, preparation, and hard work that they devote to the job search. And a lot of that relates to networking and developing of referral sources.
So if you are sitting out there listening to this thinking, I'll get away from, I won't have to do any networking, I'll just go to graduate school, I hope you're hearing loud and clear, you never walk away from networking because you need it no matter what it is that you're going to do. And it's such a critical skill, and What I love the way you said it, too, do it when it's low impact. When you're a sophomore in college talking to employers, they know you're not looking for a job. They're just so so happy to be giving you information, and it's just you get yourself in a rhythm of asking for advice, information, referrals. That's just exactly what it's about. The other thing that you said, too, and I sort of chuckled a little bit, I think it's such a good idea to talk to people in the career services office, whether it is, you know, the law school that you're considering or a business school or any other graduate school. I think that's the place you want to start, and because the career services folks are going to give you sort of the lay of the land. Their job is not to recruit you. Their job is really to tell you, share information with you. Now, clearly, we're always going to put our school's, you know, best foot forward, but most counselors, most career coaches are going to try and make sure that you're picking the right graduate school or helping you make that determination if graduate school is the right thing. But they're going to be asking more questions than they are sort of selling to you. So you really want to make sure that you talk to people. My sense is admissions folks do a lot of coaching and counseling too, but they have a slightly different agenda than career services does.
Well, I think you're right, but I think, and let me just make an analogy that I think you will enjoy using later on. If you were going to buy a car, Kathy, you would certainly go and talk to the sales department, but would you really buy a car before you went and checked out the service department? I don't think you would, and I know I wouldn't, because I think it's that balanced perspective that is really fairly critical. And even in, it's one reason why I enjoy my job so much, is that I have responsibility to my university for outcomes both in admissions and in employment, but it does not do me or my university or a candidate who is ill-suited for our school, who has career goals that we cannot reasonably facilitate, it does no good for us to offer encouragement or something just to get that candidate in the door. Only if they will ultimately be dissatisfied with the advice or the information or the guidance that they were received. I think that one of the problems that the legal profession is facing is just dissatisfaction with the jobs that are taken. And perhaps students feel like they have to take a particular type of job or graduates, a particular type of job at a particular salary level in order to pay off their student loans. And there is no doubt that that is a terrible reality for many people. But if candidates for admission and law students can just find out what they believe as best they can about what job setting will make them happiest, I think we will start to see more satisfied lawyers and less dissatisfied lawyers. And I think that inquiry process is beginning way, 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 way too late or is ill-founded or is being conducted for all the wrong reasons in the last several years.
It's so interesting. I tell this story often when I was working at the law firm, and one of the associates had just been made partner. And I was so excited, and I ran up to him, and Michael, that's fabulous. Congratulations. And he had sort of this dazed look on his face, and he said, I have no idea how I got here. This was never my dream. And he wasn't complaining about the, you know, that he'd gotten it, but it just really wasn't, like he knew he should be happy about it because this was what he was supposed to want, but it was a little unsatisfying for him because this was never the dream. And so what I often experienced was people would get into school, they'd come in with a dream of doing, you know, doing public service or doing good or you know, they had sort of a plan, and because they're competitive and they kind of got into this herd mentality of this is the only right path and this is what you're supposed to want, and it's a great path if you want it. So I would never disparage it, but if you don't want it, you give up a lot for something that you don't really want. So it really is okay to follow your own path, and that, I think you're right, as more people realize that, then we're going to see a happier profession, and yeah, it would be a whole new ball game.
Well, I think you're right, Kathy, and I think that one of the things that is going to make that happen more and make more people happy earlier is the increased emphasis on experiential learning while someone is in law school. And I think this is the same for graduate school. I actually have a master's degree and a doctoral degree rather than a law degree. But I remember, and this was some time ago, but I can remember being somewhat disgruntled when I did student teaching at the end of a four-year college degree. And it was only then that I realized I really wasn't well suited to be a classroom Spanish teacher. Now, those kinds of disconnects can be avoided in a graduate professional or law program just by taking advantage of the many, many experiential learning opportunities that are out there. I can speak most knowledgeably now about, obviously, the law school setting, but the opportunity to have mentoring programs in the first year, which my school offers, the opportunity to have internships, externships, numerous opportunities over the course of the two summers that are pivotal in the law school student's career. And then clinical programs. So I think that the wide array of experiential learning opportunities is going to help students taste test various careers much earlier than they have. And I do think that is one of the happy exchanges of information that is now taking place in most law schools nationwide.
Which is great, and a lot of that too is even happening at the undergraduate level. And I often tell people, make sure you get the internships and the summer jobs, even if they're unpaid summer jobs. That's the opportunity to test what you like to do, and even more importantly, start networking with people that are in the industry or field that you want to be in. It's sort of interesting. I don't know that you necessarily know the answer to this, but you know, it seems to me that business school graduates don't have some of these issues that they have in law school, and my theory is because you can't go to business school until you've worked for a couple of years. They won't
mm-hmm.
accept you right
mm-hmm.
out of college.
Do
you find that that's true with the business schools? Is it, there's not the same level of unhappiness?
Well, I think that is true. I think that typically MBA programs are much smaller. I think that if I think about my own university, they're much more specialized. MBA program for MDs, the MBA program for aeronautical specialists. I mean, there are all these really, really focused MBA programs in addition to just general MBAs. And I think the more those people clearly have a career focus. They didn't just wander into the aerospace MBA program thinking that there might be something they would like. So I think it's a natural evolution of the increased specialization of MBA programs. And if you think about it, when I'm counseling students who are trying to decide between an MBA program and a law, our JD program at my school happens to include the option of a concentration in transactional corporate law. And many times students are trying to say, well, Dr. Britton, should I do the JD program with the concentration in transactional law and the MBA program in a dual degree program? What are the advantages? Well, the advantages are really fairly obvious. Two different employer bases from which to task. At a typical MBA program at a major university, you're not going to have many law firms or legal organizations over there interviewing. So if you want to try to look at a job with a corporation, getting an MBA right out of school, I think an MBA certainly makes a lot of sense. And the same thing, we, at least in my school, we're a large public university in the southeastern United States, don't have a lot of corporations looking for in-house lawyers who come and interview, at least through our on-campus interview program. So I think that some of the advantages of the MBA model, and plus it's a much shorter program in most instances, has some real pluses for many, many individuals, that's for sure. And I think that it begs the question of, it goes back to the very first thing you asked me, Kathy, is law school the right degree? Is law the right career? I have many people who will come in and talk with me, and I will say, and they will say, actually, I don't have to be a lawyer if I go to law school, do I? And I think that's such a profound question. I don't have to be a lawyer if I go to law school, do I? Well, and I'm trying not to be flippant, but I'm saying, you know, if you don't want to be a lawyer, there is probably a better degree program out there for you than a law degree. And
right.
This is just my personal opinion, but I think that for years the law degree has been promoted as being an excellent, and it is an excellent generalist degree that gives you a skill set that is incredibly flexible. But it's a long, rigorous, expensive, 3-year full-time program. I think I would have to seriously assess whether or not the skills that I wanted, if I didn't want to practice law, whether the skills that I wanted couldn't be acquired in an alternative setting that might make more sense. I would at least ask that question before I assumed that law school was the only route to go if you do not want to practice law.
And you know, I think that's exactly right, because I often hear, well, you know, give me more options. Well, what might those options be, and what's another way that you might get them? And I'm with you. I think to be legally educated, I mean, the law touches everything. So if you're prepared to do that work, invest that time and that enormous amount of money, yes, it could be a great thing, but that may not be the most cost-effective way to achieve your goals if that's what you're trying to do. So,
well, I think that's right, and I think that you're going to see law schools dabbling as they go through curricular changes and trying to determine how to best position themselves for the future. You're going to see many law schools that are going to be offering programs for people who have no intention of practicing law, for human resources professionals in much the same way, actually, as I see in MBA programs. So you're going to see all sorts of different degree programs, in my estimation, coming out of law schools in the next few years, as law schools are to some extent retrenching and realizing that the market simply is not there for the traditional JD model program, 3 years full-time to continue. I mean, I'm just not sure it's a viable alternative for every law school with over 200 law schools, APA-accredited law schools down in the United States. And we have not as many jobs for those individuals, and the applicant pool for law schools nationwide has dropped by about 40%. So it is an incredibly interesting time to be thinking about going to law school. But it is also a gut check time for law schools in America as they try to think about how to reposition themselves for the future, where the demand is just different.
Different. Well, it's just different. That's fascinating. I hadn't even really thought about that. One of the things I want, because while I have you on the phone, I want to talk about financing a graduate degree. I mean, I know you've got a fair amount of information in
right.
financial aid. So what's the best way to do this?
Well, I think that a student is going to find a tremendous disparity between the type of funding models that are there for a graduate education, a PhD or a master's program, and what is available for a professional degree program. So I think that it's important to ask questions, particularly as it relates to institutional support. And I can use my university as an example, because when I went through my master's program and my doctoral program, I had significant financial support from the department. However, most law schools are considered to some extent as a cash cow for the university. They are meant to be income generators and are often self-sufficient and often do not, or at least heretofore have not had, the type of graduate assistantships that an English department might have, don't have the number of teaching assistants that a chemistry department might have. So whereas a graduate program might have a few students that they provide extensive support for, financial support for through teaching and research assistantships, law schools are not that way. I mean, the vast majority of law students are going to fund their legal education through loans, not scholarships. Now, granted, there is always going to be an upper tier, an upper echelon of students, particularly in this day and time, who receive significant scholarship funding. But that is not going to be the vast majority of the applicants out there. So I think it's important to think about to think specifically about the financial investment of law school as legal education has become increasingly expensive and the funding is just simply not there as it might be for some graduate and professional school programs. So realizing there's a difference and not being timid to ask questions, I think is fairly important.
So, and it also strikes me, if it's someone who is currently working and about to give up a job, they've got to factor in not just the cost of education, but the cost of the lost income.
That's exactly right. And if they are relocating perhaps to a larger city, and if you think about it, as you well know, the relationship between geography and the job search, particularly for law school graduates, as you know, Kathy, 75% of law graduates, law school graduates, take their first job in the same region of the country as where they attended law school. But say there's an individual from the Southeast who really wants to work in New York. In this day and time, quite honestly, I'd recommend they go to school in the Northeast in order to be accessible for that job market. Well, that could be a huge difference in cost for that individual to be educated and live in a larger city than perhaps they had experience for their undergraduate years. So not only for the working adult who might be thinking about making giving up a career, as you had just outlined, but also people who are factoring in relocation in order to position themselves to be near the employment setting that they seek. So that's another factor that I can assure you most people don't take into consideration.
And so what do you think in terms of, you know, the U.S. News & World Report and the top list of colleges, is the school that you choose to go to important?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it definitely is. I think that law schools probably don't like to say this, but I think they are more alike than they are different. I sit on panels with other admissions colleagues all the time, and as we describe our schools, we all do virtually the same thing. I think the differences truly are reputation, that for the most part. I mean, obviously there are quality differences in terms of faculty and the kind of networking that can provide. I think the alumni base that can be tapped for potential employment, for research opportunities, are very different from school to school. But the actual core curriculum being taught is probably not as different as the differences in the access that one school might afford compared to another. Now, is that adequately reflected in U.S. News? Well, I'm not sure that the way U.S. News goes about measuring reputation necessarily is an accurate measure, but I do think that it would be just naive to think that the reputation of the school and the access that can be provided through the strength of the alumni base, those are absolutely critical. Not sure U.S. News is the way to measure that. There are many other ways that you can measure that, but I think it is just the best practice in this day and time is to have some idea of what region of the country you would like to work in, because it is much easier, I think, to carve out the career of your dreams if you are looking in the same region where you go to law school.
Yeah.
Not that it isn't possible, but it's just easier.
Right. And that's, I've said that to people many times. And also, I think my sense is law school is a little bit different from business school. I mean, there are certainly, we know that sort of the lead business schools that are just, you know, the Harvard Business School, the Wharton, those are great.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other business schools that are perfectly fine, and that level of, I don't know how else to say this, the prestige factor is not as, you know, you got an MBA, it doesn't really matter as much what school, whereas oftentimes I think with a law degree, it does matter for the geography that you want to be in, and the name of the school holds a particular power for a lot of folks. And I've had a couple of people, you know, who want to be in New York, and of course New York is so saturated with law schools. There were 12 of them, I think, in this region, and they maybe will go to one of the regional schools because it's 3 miles from their home. And maybe they're even getting scholarships, so they're thinking, this is probably the easier one, but it may not be the best choice. If it depends on what their long-term goals are. So, you know, that's why it's so important to start at the end of this process. Where are you hoping to get to? Even if you have two or three different options of the kinds of things you want to do, and then you want to make sure the school you select is going to play to that and open up those opportunities for you.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And the way I always refer to it is to whether the school can reasonably facilitate the career path, open the doors that this individual would like opened with their own involvement. And I'll have to say that, and I know you are much more well-read in this topic than I would ever be, but just what we hear from employers now about the interpersonal skills, the communication skills that are required of this generation, that a generation which, you know, like I'm often sending brief text messages instead of formal correspondence. But what we are seeing is that law schools in particular have to take a very active role in preparing their students to enter a professional environment and meet professional responsibilities and adopt professional behaviors. So I would think that a savvy student looking at law schools right now should not only evaluate the cost and the return on benefit, but what kind of training is the school going to provide in addition to the substantive areas of the law. What kind of professionalism training? What kind of training in the intangible skills? What kind of relationship to the core competencies that law firms or other legal employers are seeking to develop in terms of leadership skills, business and marketing, other kinds of skills that are tangential to the law degree but are very important to success? And I know my school and others are certainly taking a look and relating very directly to employers to find out what their core competency models are, what skills matter to them, what skills define success, so that we can then model our professional development training in law school to help students figure out how to gather those skills while they're in school. One thing, and I think you would, there's an old adage about law school that I absolutely think is true. The first year they scare you to death, the second year they work you to death, and the third year they bore you to death. And I think that schools are actively going about, I think there's truth to that. I think in the second year of law school, there are so many opportunities to get involved in activities, law review, journals, mock trial, pro bono, public interest, affinity groups, that students don't often think to stop to think about where the best use of their time is related to skill development that will matter to an employer. And I think that law school career services offices can be very helpful in trying to help interpret for their students how their time could best be spent. And then the clinical programs and the experiential learning that are increasingly characterizing the third year, certainly I think now make the third year not at all boring in most American law schools.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, I would be remiss in the time that we have left. Let's make the assumption that they've done their homework and they know that they've got the 26 factors. Now they're doing their admissions application. So put your admissions hat on. What are you looking for when you're making those wilted, did you say? What are you looking for when you're looking at their applications? What makes a powerful application?
I think that the first responsibility, I'm going to write powerful application. The first responsibility of any law school is to admit candidates who show the potential for success in the academic experience called law school. Every law school is responsible for admitting candidates whose academic background will predict that they can succeed in arguably the most rigorous academic program they will ever approach. And I think that can be misleading because so many of our applicants these days have very, very high grades. In undergraduate school, often they have high SAT scores. So I think that we are looking for those signals of academic success as baseline measures of a candidate who is appropriate for law school. In addition to that, I think that you're going to find that each law school may have their own formula for what they are looking for. I think I can certainly speak for my school of saying assembling a class is just kind of like working on a big jigsaw puzzle, and pieces are going on and off the table all the time. What our goal is to assemble an interesting class of individuals from diverse educational backgrounds, diverse cultural backgrounds. When we're saying we're seeking diversity, I think that what that means is diversity of thought, diversity of perspective, diversity of age, race, ethnicity, literally to have the most interesting class of people that you possibly can. So I think everybody contributes to that melting pot, I suppose, in their own individual way. I know that my goal is to have the admission, to have our faculty come to me and say, I think this is the most interesting class ever, Karen. You know, they're traditional age people. There's that man who ran the healthcare company for years. There are so many people with technical backgrounds. They bring so much to make the classroom richer. So I think that's what most law schools are looking for in this day and time from an individual candidate, is an expression of how they can make the classroom richer, what they bring to the table. I think they're also looking for those baseline assurances that the candidate will be able to thrive in a rigorous academic setting as well as contribute to the rich experience of the law school.
And it's so interesting to me because it all, you always end where you begin. It has to be with the self-assessment. So it's not some canned answer that the admissions people are looking for any more than it's a canned answer that an employer is looking for. They're looking for who is this person and what value do you bring, and you got to be who you are, and you have to know who you are, and then tell your story well, and that's going to either get you the job you want or get you into the school that you want, but you've got to spend that time. There's no way around it, really thinking through, what's my plan? What do I want?
I think we are right back to the beginning, Kathy.
Yeah, it's. I keep telling you know, it's so funny that this is not a linear process. You know, all the pieces kind of keep leading almost in a circle, and I don't mean to imply that you don't get anywhere, but they're all interconnected. It's not just a first do this, then do this, then do this. You've got to kind of constantly be thinking and assessing. And I say that particularly for people who maybe are working and now they're thinking about going back to school. Again, it's sort of you've done something, you've got some skills. Don't dismiss all that as being unimportant. That's incredibly important, but how does it fit into the picture? And it's your job to sort of tell that story and tell it well.
Well, I think back to the self-assessment piece, just knowing what your transferable skills are, whether you are a second career individual or just a traditional age student who is very active on campus. students have to go through, or people have to go through self-assessment to know how to articulate their strengths and what skills are transfer, what skills they have developed, to then be able to know how those skill sets relate to what employers, legal employers, seek.
And the one message that I want to leave all of our listeners with is use the Career Services Office. There is, and I have been hearing this since 25 years ago, and I would do this, oh, the Career Services Office only helps the top 10%, or, oh, well, they didn't do anything for me. They are a resource, and it's a rich resource, but you've got to avail yourself. That means you've got to go in, and you've got to ask for what you need and ask for help and be proactive about it, because these are folks that work really, really hard, and they're really – for most career services people, it is a passion, it is a mission, but you've got to put the effort in too. They're not going to do it for you. That's the thing that I think people miss sometimes. So I'm sure they're all waiting for you.
Well, I think that's right, but I think also what career services offices do is help people be self-sufficient in their next job searches, because the days of someone going to a law firm and staying until they retire are gone. So people have to have those critical job search skills to get them through the rest of their life, because as we all know, there is no on-campus interview program after law school. There's no OCI in life.
That's it. No OCI in life. That's going to be the title of my next book, Karen. I like that.
There you go.
No OCI in life. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight, and it's actually that is a great segue to remind people that they can get a copy of my book called Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success. Simply email me your address and where you want me to send the book. I'll send you a PayPal invoice. The book normally retails for $13.95 plus shipping and handling, but for $10, I will send it to you and include the shipping. So feel free to send me an email at kbrady@careerplanners.net to get a copy of the book. Also wanted to remind folks, if you have missed past shows, you can get any of the archives of Get a Job, as well as any of the other shows that are found on Life Coach Radio Network on iTunes. So you can listen while you run or do whatever else it is that you do, but you certainly, iTunes is a great way to download them all. Just search iTunes by Life Coach Radio Network, and you'll get all the shows. You can also find my particular shows, the archives of my shows, on my website, which is careerplanners.net, or on my Facebook page, KB Career Planners. Just want to also mention the next three shows coming up on Life Coach Radio Network. Tomorrow, Thursday at 12 p.m., we have Gaining Perspective with Coach Andrea Ruckelman. I'm sorry, Andrea, messed up her name there. On Friday at 11:15 at 1 p.m., we have Train Your Brain with Coach Mandy. She's always does a lively show. She's a lot of fun, so that's one you don't want to miss. And then Sunday, 11:17 at 9 p.m., we have Mark My Words with our life coach, Mark Schell. So don't forget to log in for those. So, Karen, if anybody has further questions, how might they get in touch with you?
Yes, certainly. I'll be glad to give you my email address. It's simple. It's Britton, B-R-I-T-T-O-N, at utk.edu. And I'd be happy to help in any way I can.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us here tonight, and I want to thank our audience for listening. And, again, if anyone has any questions, feel free to email Karen, email me. Our job is to help you be successful in whatever path it is that you choose to take. So thanks again, Karen, and Bernie, best wishes to you and your family, and thanks very much for listening tonight. Good night, everyone.